I don't know how many of you know that I'm writing a musical for Broadway based on the movie Ghost. It's something that I resisted for a very long time. It has a long history in terms of its coming into existence. I think if there's anything I might have dreamt of being more than anything else as a kid, it would be somebody who had something to do with a Broadway musical. But I never saw any way that could happen. One is I can't sing, two, I can't write music, I don't know anything about any of that stuff, except that I enjoy it. I was approached by a producer some years ago who actually then passed away, and somebody else at his company came to me afterward and said they still were interested. And then they brought in a producer from London, so there's a whole sort of thing going on. Anyway, we hired a very prominent musical composer and lyricist, who then proceeded to take a fairly long time to come up with very little. And the first thing that was brought to me was a kind of a lyric that had somehow been like scribbled on a napkin, and I just looked at it. And my first thought was, I could do better than that. And then the person who was writing the lyric, I tried to talk to this woman, and I tried to explain what I really thought this musical should be. And in the process, she started telling me how uncomfortable she was with the realm of spirits and ghosts, which, you know, that's all the show is. So I was going to call the producers and say, I think we have a problem, but they called me first and said that the composer and the lyricist quit. So I said, well, maybe I can write better lyrics than this woman was writing. So I sat down and I started writing songs. I haven't written two words that rhyme since I was 10 years old. But these lyrics just started coming out. And truly, I have to tell you, I don't know how to write a song. And I don't know what it is exactly that was forming, but it was a narrative. It had content. It had something very attractive about it. And I showed them to the producers, and they said, don't show these to anybody. They didn't like them very much. Although I showed them to a few friends. Jackie was one of them, who was very supportive. And I thought they were good. But, you know, I thought, you know, I'm not writing a, you know, I'm not professional here. They brought me to composers and lyricists, songwriters, very famous, actually. Although I didn't know their work. One guy is a guy named Dave Stewart, who's from the Eurythmics, and another is a guy named Glenn Ballard, who writes for Alanis Morissette and lots of other people. And I just thought, pop music just didn't seem like the right thing for this at all. I was very resistant, I have to say. I just didn't want to do it. I thought there must be somebody who writes musical theater who can do this, but I realized that everybody that I wanted has been dead for 40 years. You know, Rodgers and Hammerstein, and, you know, I mean, on and on, Lerner and Lowe. So, a meeting was arranged with these two guys, and I was told, don't talk about my lyrics. But I said, screw that. I've worked too hard not to show them to them. So I walked into our meeting, and we started talking, and it was really kind of fascinating. Dave is an amazing guy, but he really speaks through music. And Glenn, who works with him, Glenn Ballard, is a pure heart, just unbelievable heart, who completely gets and interprets Dave. And Dave always wants to go and start playing music, and Glenn is willing to listen and talk a little bit. And so I kind of used Glenn, and he and I started to really connect, and he kind of held Dave in check for a moment. And I showed them my lyrics. And they said, these are great. These are great. The next thing I know, before I could even take a breath, Dave had out his guitar, and he was composing to my lyrics. And the music was beautiful. And I was suddenly a songwriter. There I was. They were playing music to my words. This has gone on now for a while. The songs are amazing. They're completely, absolutely beautiful. Truly beautiful and exciting and dynamic and everything musical theater should be. I am in a state of endless astonishment, not knowing how I got here, how this is actually happening. They augment my work in wonderful ways. They add bridges to music, because I never know what a bridge is in a song, but they find them and they add to them, and they create these additional elements to it. And what's so extraordinary being in a room with these guys is there's no ego. None. It doesn't matter who comes up with what. If it works, it works. It's just complete, absolute, joyous collaboration. Truly wonderful. And the force of creative energy that flows through this dynamic is almost like nothing I've ever experienced except with Rudy, where there was just pure flow, pure energetic flow. And when we sit in a class, of course, that energetic flow is turning into a kind of internal flow, which is opening us up to our own creativity. And it's really an internal process. But the writing of a musical and writing of songs is all of that energy externalized. It's people taking this collective flow and bringing it into manifestation, into the world. And you watch it emerge note by note by note. Or with people like Dave and Glenn, chords and huge choruses within instant. It just comes alive. It just enters the room. And you watch creative process in physical terms. I actually record all this because I'm so awed by it. It's just, you know, it's like, you know, I'm a writer of, I write movies, and it takes 9 months to a year to get a script, and before you even get a comment from people. So you write a good line and nobody says, oh my God, Bruce, that's a great line. That never happens, you know, ever. Here you write a great line, they go, oh God, that's great, it's perfect, put it in, okay. And everybody does it, and it's like endless feedback. It's like so joyous, it's so joyous. And then on Thursday this week, the truly surreal occurred, in that Dave brought Ringo Starr in to play drums on a song that I wrote. If you had ever told me 20 years ago that I would meet a Beatle, let alone having a Beatle playing drums on one of my songs, there was no way the universe could make that happen. What would it take for that to arrive in this world? And there it was, and I'm standing in the room, and Ringo's got his arm around me, and we're taking our picture, and he's playing these drums, and he's fantastic, and he's laying down these tracks that are just spectacular. And I'm just standing there, going... And then Ringo does something very interesting and strange. He slips a white band around my wrist, a little rubber thing. He says, don't ever take it off, it'll bring you luck. The first thing I wanted to do was take it off. I do not like anybody giving me a talisman of any kind and saying, this is the thing that you must therefore for the rest of your life look to for good fortune. God forbid it should fall off in the middle of whatever and my life would collapse. And everybody else in the room, and there were guys, Glenn, for example, still wears his rubber band from a year ago, and he hasn't taken it off, and there are people who don't take them off. I got home, the first thing I did is, I got nervous actually, but I said, I can't do this. I'm not giving him that kind of power. Period. Whenever people have given me these things, I throw them away. When someone sends me a chain letter saying, if you don't send this out in the next 5 minutes, you're going to have terrible... I just trash them instantly. But this one took a moment of thought, because so much weirdness had come into bringing this moment into being. What am I going to do? So I just took it off, and I put it on my meditation stand on top of a little thing that I have there. I said, you can have it. The next thing, my car won't start. My computer crashes. And a litany of obstruction. So, what does one do? The whole universe has brought this whole extraordinary, surreal thing into being, offers me a talisman that will give me luck forever, and I reject it, and I have bad luck. So, that's what I'm going to talk about. Where does our luck come from? And how much truth and how much belief do we put in magic? How much power do we give away? I cannot believe, truly, that Ringo is in charge of the luck in my life. And I really do believe, and he's an interesting and I think a really fantastic person who's had one of those wonderful lives you want to write home about, you know. It's like you don't get them very often. But as powerful as that may be, and as emblematic as that may be of something wonderful, in the end, we cannot give ourselves to external force, to external power. You can't give yourself to a teacher, you can't give yourself to anyone or anything and expect them to bring you what you want. What you want arises. What you need arises. One of Ringo's competitors, if you want to call him that, Mick Jagger, said, you don't always get what you want, but you always get what you need. And that's really true. In my life, need is satisfied by something remarkable. And that is this thing called life. Life is arising continually within us and around us, and it is endlessly bringing us what we need. And what is it that we need? It's a question truly you should all ask yourselves, and you should ask yourselves on a fairly regular basis. What do I need? The answer that comes back in the deepest place, and maybe even for people deeper than this one, is we need to be. We need to be. Everything in existence pushes us toward being. But if you look deep enough inside, you discover that you cannot not be. You cannot not be because being is what you are. So this need to be is the need to be what you are. That's all we are. We are this, and we need to be this. And the whole universe needs us to be this. And then what is this that we need to be? Well, 99.9% of us will identify that as this living individual person, this body thing that I am. I need to be this. But as you begin to awaken, and I have my flashes of this. I was driving home the other night after my car wouldn't start, and AA came and started it in an instant. So that there was no real obstruction, really. The car wouldn't start, and then it would start. So for a minute it didn't, and I had to sit for 10 more minutes and wait for AA and spend time with a friend. So there was no obstruction, really, other than what the mind might tell you. But as I was driving home, I was suddenly overtaken by this thing that overtakes me every so often, and it's wonderful, that I am the car, that I am the street, that I am everything I am passing. I am the lights. I am the billboards. I am everyone in every car. I am what is. That's what I am. I happen to be perceiving it through Bruce at this moment, but I am the whole thing. Now, I know when you just say that to people, it goes in cognitively and just doesn't really register in a particularly profound way. It's like, okay. But when it happens and you, in a sense, truly know it, it means everything. It just means everything. You are endlessly, endlessly unfolding as all of this. There is no one thing in it that is more worthy or less worthy than anything else. But there are things within this manifested state of you that have more dynamic. Rudy had more dynamic than me, than this, than the Bruce aspect. The Bruce aspect has a certain presentation. Rudy had a certain presentation. The great thing that a Rudy can do is that Rudy, in his connection to the whole, can actually look at you and take you and go and touch you. He just touches you. And the dynamic of his touch, of his look, of his gesture, of his presence makes you feel who you are in connection with that. It doesn't bring you luck. It brings you a kind of knowing, a kind of simple truth, something that is exquisitely beautiful. When Ringo hands you a little band and says this will bring you luck, and you compare that to someone like Rudy bringing you truth, what is this luck thing? It's just something that goes into your mind. And it makes you, in a sense, interact with it that says, okay, now I'm going to have luck, now I'm going to have luck, now I'm going to have luck, don't ever lose this thing. It makes you bound to the world instead of freeing you from the world. And so you develop this false sense of security. Is that a bad thing? You know, to walk around thinking, I'm going to have luck. I'm going to have luck. In truth, it kind of works. Any of you who ever saw Dumbo know that it works. Dumbo was given the feather in his trunk and said, you'll be able to fly. He believed it. And of course he flew. And then he discovered it was really his big ears that were doing it. But he didn't know he had the power to do it. He gave it off to this little feather. He thought the feather was doing it. But in fact, he had the power all the time. We have white bands and yellow bands and red bands. We have so many bands around us offering us luck and energy and possibility and flow and joy and goodness that we don't even have to put them on. We would walk around like, you know, those guys in Africa who have all those bracelets and all those things hanging off their ears and all that stuff, you know, full of charms, full of talisman, full of all of these sort of decorative blessings. But the truth is, you are already blessed. You have it all. We have it all. Everybody has it all. The big problem is we don't know it. Or, more importantly, we don't believe it. We just don't believe it. And what really is amazing in this awakening process is really what's happening more than anything else is you really begin to believe it. You really begin to believe, I am this. Because your instincts tell you, I am this body, I am this thing, I am this mind, I am this contained, limited thing. We walk around thinking that, but when that wall of that suddenly starts to break down, you realize, of course, I am this. What else am I but this? What else am I but the life I live, the whole of it? What else am I but the enormity of the universe? What else could I be? How could there be suns and moons and stars and galaxies without me? And at the same time, everything else, of course. How could there be darkness and suffering and all the other stuff? And then you start to go, wow, what am I? What am I that I contain all this? What am I? I am this. And I can't say you come to a conclusion of what you are, or how or why you are, but you are deeply aware that you are, and that you contain the mystery of mysteries, the light and the dark, the yin and the yang, the whole Megillah is you. It's who you are. To know that with your mind, of course, is meaningless. It doesn't mean a thing, and the ego identifies with it and it gets itself in trouble. The ego walks around going, I am all of this. No, your ego is not all this. Your ego is a pinpoint in all of this. But you are not your ego, or you're not limited to your ego. You are this vastness. And that vastness contains ultimate luck. Ultimate luck. Ultimate luck is somewhere along the line, I cannot tell you when or how, grace will descend and you will know that you are this, that you are all of this, and that all of this is in its own mysterious way wonderful and perfect. And you won't understand it, and you never will, because it is never meant to be understood. It is meant to be lived. It is meant to be discovered, because every moment of our life is a part of the creation of life itself. Every moment we live, we create life. Every choice we make locks in life, creates truth, creates absolute truth. If I choose to turn right on Olympic or left on Olympic, I have just changed the universe. It locked into right. I had to make a U-turn and go left, but that was all part of the truth of creating the moment. It's how it works. We are the absolute creators of life. And I look at people like Glenn and Dave and Ringo and me sitting in this room, watching everybody get out of the way and this beautiful music arise. Beautiful. And it arises because there is no ego mind saying, me, mine, I own this line, oh, this, I wrote a good thing here. Nothing like that. It just contributes to the whole. It is the description of heaven, of what this world could be and would be if we got out of our ego mind and just became contributive to something larger and greater. And these music guys are dealing with something really interesting, which is they aren't making any money on their writing anymore, or not very much, because the world is stealing it, literally taking it away. It's downloaded, given away, shared by everybody, and they're still creating. I don't know what new model will exist in this world when you can't support yourself based on your creative flow, but it isn't stopping the creative flow. It's still happening because they need to produce, because they cannot not be. They cannot not create. And it is so beautiful to watch this loving energy arise, and then to watch what happens in the movie business, which is where everyone wants their name on this thing, fighting for credits. Executives want the power to change something just so they can show that they have power. You know, I can go on and on about the negative side of the movie business, but it's the exact opposite. It's conflict. It's creating difficulty in movement, and that in so many ways describes our lives. Most people we are with do not flow with us, they flow against us. there is this endless sense of, I want that spot, I want that money, I want that thing, and somebody else has it. And the frustration of that, the stampede nature of life, people running to get the thing they want, forget everybody else. Of course, the minute everybody files in order and nobody tries to push in front of everybody, it all works. But that doesn't happen a lot. The human drive for me and mine and now and give me, well, I want, that propels life. It keeps it going all the time. And it is as it should be. Because it's how life works. If you want to watch life at its most sort of conflicted, dynamic, warring nature, someone told me, watch root systems in trees and plants, fighting for the nutrients in the ground, fighting for the earth, fighting to control the space they're in. You know, if we look at nature and we say, oh, it's so beautiful and so peaceful, it's at war. It's fighting all the time for prominence, for give me more space, more light, more air. It's what is. So I don't want to say the world and its construct is wrong. It is what it is. But if you awaken to what that is in yourself, it is a total wonder. It's a wonder. This thing that we are, this life that we are, this surging energy that Rudy used to sit still in a room like this. He would sit still and just look at you and torrents and torrents of energy pouring out for you. And you could sit there and go, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy, don't look at me, not now, no, no, I got all these problems, I'm not a good person. Or you can go, okay, let me have it. And you just open up and you sit there and you feel all of these things in you which want to clutch and you go, no, no, no. Or you also, better wait, better put, you go, yes, yes, yes. And this energy comes into you. And suddenly all the bad person in you just washes away. All the negativity in you washes away. And what do you find in yourself is just this energy, just this cleansing, just this clarity that awakens you to what? To your being, to this. This is it. Your being isn't waiting for you down the road. Your being isn't waiting for you to awaken to in 5 years. This is your being. You're in it. Where else would you be? This is all you. This is all you, and all it wants to do is be. And whether you want to help it or not, you're it. You are being. So you can get on board and really awaken to the dynamic within you, this incredible potential to flow like Rudy, like Dave and Glenn and Ringo, and all these guys who bring so much life to the table, who have so much flowing through them. And there's a richness to that extraordinary explosion of life energy. Or you can constrict it and, you know, dole it out a little bit here and a little bit there. It's okay. It still works. It just isn't as much fun. You know, you can do whatever you like. That's the great thing about this life. You can do whatever you like. It may not support it completely at first. It may be very hard for it to do. But if life can make a person like me, a little kid from Detroit, who can't sing, barely writes a good rhyme, become a songwriter who has one of the Beatles, playing drums on one of his songs, if it can make that happen, what can't happen? What? It can all happen. And it doesn't have to be on your time frame, and it doesn't happen to be exactly as you imagine it, but it will work itself through because life loves you and wants you to have what you want, but more importantly, what you need. That's what it wants. And if you're really open to that inside you, trust me, it comes. What you need comes. But you got to be willing to be a vessel. You got to be willing to bring this on. Let the energy move through you. Produce. Do the work. If you don't want to do the work, it's fine. Life doesn't care if you don't do the work. It'll let you sit back in your room and watch TV. It's content to watch TV. But if you want a dynamic, exciting life, you can have it. You just have to do it. Again, it may not be exactly the way you want it to go, which I know frustrates so many people. I have so many friends who are not getting their careers, they're not getting the money, they're not getting the stuff they want. But the truth of life is work your ass off, get in there, dig, reach, do all of this stuff, just enjoy, have fun, and see what it does. You still have a great life. You know, it's not about what comes back, it's about what you put out. That's the amazing part of life, the giving, the thrill of exploding energy, of fulfilling energy. That's what we live for. And if it comes back, great. But, you know, people do things. Most people don't get appreciated for what they do, but you can still do it. You can still do it. Life loves you because it gives you the joy of the experience of it happening. That's the great thing. Trust me, the stuff that comes back, that, oh, you're so good, you're so wonderful, it's so great, I love what you did. It falls flat, guys. It falls flat compared to the joy of having done it. That's all. You know it's good. You know it's worthy. You know it gave you pleasure. Trust me, it's enough. So, anyway, that's my story for today, how Bruce met Ringo Starr.
I do.
I have a picture. I'll prove it. I'll show you. I'll tell you the odd thing. You know, it may be the pictures, in fact, that I downloaded to my computer that crashed my computer. Explain that one. I don't think he's bad luck, but I do think anyone who walks around telling people that I'm giving you good luck is creating a kind of more problem than help, except for a certain kind of person who will use that good luck idea in a way that helps them. But you know, I don't want to pass judgment. I just find it all amazing and basically more than anything fun.
Before we became famous, you know, the Beatles were all in this flat, and I came home one day, you know, and I said, I found the love of my life. So she loves me. And Ringo said, she loves you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I just turned it around. Whatever it came out of his mouth, I turned it to the opposite, oh, and I made a hit song.
It's a good story. I hope it recorded here. Well, guys, thank you all. Thank you all very much. I'll be here next week. Somewhere like next week, we'll start talking a little bit about the Rudy Samadhi, which, as you know, is basically another gathering to watch the video of Rudy, and also a dinner, which we provide. And I need people, and I will need people at that point to sign up for it. Who's going to be coming, and anyone who wants to bring anything, that's great. But I'll order. I've been for the last few years getting deli stuff, so we'll do something.
Mm-hmm.
Rudy Samadhi is on the 21st of this month, which is I don't remember what day it is. I think it's Thursday. Okay, thank you all for coming.